Welcome to the ATL Podcast Network.
I'm Anissa.
And I'm Ellen.
And this is Raw. For those of you who are not Rawyers, that's our tribe.
We get real, we get raw.
Yeah. Yeah. Our thing is like no filter ever, unless it's Snapchat.
We're one take whores.
Yeah. And I'm wondering about the one take with the podcast. Boy, that'd be really interesting.
I love that. Listen, it's one take always, yeah, baby. One take always.
It is. You always know. You never know what you're going to get, but you can always trust that what you get is going to be real.
That's it. That's it in a nutshell right there. Yeah. We're done. Drop the mic. Hey, everybody, it's Ellen.
And it's Anissa.
And this is...
Anissa and Ellen Raw.
I know every time we do this, we always say, oh my gosh, we're so excited. We are.
Oh my gosh.
I can't even stand it.
We're so excited.
We're so excited. We've mentioned this person a couple times, but not mainly because she's Brian's fiance, and she's always here when we're taping. Well, most of the time she's here when we're taping.
Or just coming in.
Yeah. This is going to be so much fun.
So fun.
She's so beautiful, isn't she? She got her hair cut today, and it's beautiful. I don't think anybody else could rock it. I totally couldn't, but she is. So let's introduce Vanessa. So
Hi, Vanessa.
Hi, Vanessa.
Hello, Ellen and Anissa. How are you? Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. Yes. So, Vanessa, tell the people out there about yourself, girl.
Well,
do
to
it.
All you raw people out there and raw men, because is it
raw ears? Men can listen.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, for all the raw folk out there, my name is Vanessa Fraction. Action Fraction is what I go by. Miss Fraction, if you nasty. I'm a comedian, an actress, a writer, and a self defense teacher as well. Yeah.
Woo. Yes.
Woo. Added that comma. And so, I've been doing comedy for 18 years. For 18 years plus, I think. 18 years, something in there. Great. A long time. I've had the opportunity to travel the world making people laugh and telling jokes. I've been in a movie or two. Been on a few sick. I'm very Googleable is what I'm trying to sign.
She totally is.
Yeah,
and you write, too. So you write for shows and things, correct?
I do. As a comedian, you write your own material. And so I've been on stuff like Def Comedy Jam or even Nickelodeon's Nick's Mom's Night Out or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, you get on a lot of those shows. But also, I've had the opportunity to write for The Monique Show.
Very cool.
There's
a
show called 106 in Park.
Absolutely.
And for the kids, you know.
Yeah.
And Arsenio Hall. Arsenio Hall show.
Oh, I love the reboot.
I know, that was such a dream come true because I was such a
okay,
girl.
So I was just I was just thinking you wrote for the Arsenio.
I love him.
I want to know what your skincare regimen is if you wrote for the Arsenio.
Yeah, not the original.
I love him
but
so
I love
much.
Him. Right, woo, 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 the dog pound, the whole
so
thing. So to get an opportunity to write for his show was pretty awesome. And then I recently was writing for Disney's Raven's Home.
We knew that because I think
my girls grew up watching Raven.
Yeah, that's so Raven.
That's so Raven. Yes. I think the first time we came in to tape, it was funny because when we talked to Brian about taping, we didn't even plan on, like, I think we talked to him on a Tuesday and he was like, no, you
the
need to come
Thursday,
in.
The next Thursday,
because Vanessa's out of town and I'm lonely at the house, at the apartment, so just come in and do it. And we were like, holy shit, we're not even prepared.
Right.
And so we'd heard about, so before we delve into this, I know I've said this about Brian, but Brian and I have been friends for years and years and years. And let me just tell you, I've heard all of the, you know, I went out late last night with this girl and, you know, whatever over the years.
Tell me some of those stories, too.
They were just, you know, just your typical dude stories. There was, I mean, you could tell it was nothing. But for Vanessa to come along, I was so, when I found, and because Brian and I don't talk all the time, I found out about you on Instagram.
Oh.
And so I was like, who is this?
You got a friend indeed.
I was like, who is this beautiful woman on your Instagram? And he's like, oh, that's my lady. And I'm like, okay, when did you like settle down, dude? Like, when did this all happen?
I don't think he knew.
Probably not.
I just, you know, moved right in on him.
He did. And then we knew about the engagement before you did.
I know. That was so crazy.
Yeah. We saw the ring.
Right. And y'all were holding it.
We did. And then, of course.
Really good. Yeah. I didn't even see it in your eye or anything. No.
Then it was awesome and it was wonderful.
It was really awesome.
Your reaction was. It was genuine and priceless and beautiful.
Fellas talk about it. But to really have it done, like I didn't, he kept talking about it. I was like, yeah, I've heard this before. but no, he's a real man and he's a man of his word. And so,
He's a good dude. I'm so happy that you guys are together. I'm happy that you both are happy.
Ecstatic, yeah. Actually.
Look at him over there. Just like
he's so dark skinned and blushing.
Oh, okay. He is.
See, that's what I was just thinking.
Yes, he is.
He's pretty good looking.
He is, you know, he's leaning out. Look at how lean he's getting.
I think you're better looking now than you were when I met you, like however many years ago, 10, whenever years ago it was. Yeah.
Listen, I almost missed him. Ladies, hey. I had to do a double take. I was sitting there filming a podcast. That's how we had got reunited. And I'm looking at him like, damn, he's kind of cute. Like, why don't I like men like this? Like, what the hell? I would like somebody flashy or something. I don't know what it is. I think whether they're flashy, but he is flashy in his own way.
He is.
Once you get to know. No, he's not.
Well, I mean, but he's not
I think
crazy.
He's one of the most humble men I've ever met in my life.
He really is.
So, but I haven't known you all that long, but here's my take on your man.
Okay, let's go.
He's the most understated talent, and he's so genuine. But he will never let you know how talented he is. He's so understated and humble.
I agree. And that's why I was saying he's not flashy. Yeah. Because a lot of the guys that I, especially in this business and stuff like that you get around, they're flashy. If not, and that's what I'm saying, maybe not in the bling, but in personality, in these things. And it's like, he is the fun. And I'm a comedian. So, of course, I'm around comedians all the time. He is the funniest guy I know.
He really is.
Seriously, conversationally, just in life, just the funniest. But again, it doesn't have to be, you know, on a stage or anything like that, you know.
I imagine his humor is probably a little bit understated, too. Like, you got to be listening to catch it. Are you like that?
I mean, he's an asshole.
Oh, right on.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, you got to, you know, you listen, like, what are you saying?
Oh my gosh, super funny.
I feel blessed. Yeah. I would have missed him. I was like a little taller, maybe, you know, a little richer, you know.
Oh, I love it.
Would have missed the boat.
But it's awesome to see both of you, and you guys are very, very happy, and we love that. So let's talk.
Enough about him.
I'm so curious about, you know, our platform is all about authenticity. Mm-hmm. And so one of the first questions that pops into my mind is this idea of the business that you're in, the expectations, I'm sure, and the pressures to have an image.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I'm really curious about this idea of the image and how it's posed to you, what is said to you or what the expectation is, and how on earth do you negotiate staying true to who you are? Maybe even when you were first getting into the business, I imagine now you're probably a little more seasoned. You have some, like you said, you're Googleable. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of be whatever. I'm going to do me. But in the beginning, especially, how do you even... When you want to break into it, how do you maintain your sense of self when there's an expectation to be what they want you to be?
That's a really good question. And the best thing is to be yourself because you don't know what they want you to be. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't know what they're looking for, and they're always looking for something different at a different time. So you're going to get caught up, you know, in trying to do that. I think it's a difference between being an actress and being a comedian. And you know what I mean? I think there's fine lines in all of that. I know when I first came out, it's a very good question. I want to answer it in the fullest of ways, but it's like, there is a certain thing about an image. Back when I was coming out, it was more, for a comedian, it's like, if you have something weird about you, and I don't particularly have anything, like, you know, you have to be bigger or maybe a cocked eye or some story or something that's going on visibly that makes you funny to the audience, if that makes sense.
Because
even if you look at some of the female any comedian, some of them have some very funny faces. They haven't said a word, but you like,
Jim Carrey's a freaking freak in terms of all that stuff.
Yeah, but when you put it all together,
it works.
And so it's like, if you don't have any of that stuff, I don't have a peg leg on anything, you know what I mean? Yeah. Then it's, you're trying to think about, okay, well, what do they want? And when I was coming out, you can get put into a box. Mm-hmm. And I was put into a deaf comedy jam
box
for quite mm-hmm. a while. You mm-hmm. know, it's like, oh, she's black. Oh, okay. If you're not all the way mainstream and you're black, then a lot of times it's assumed that you are vulgar and that
you
only work mm-hmm. blue and that you're, you know, just all these different things. And I give the example of when I was on deaf comedy jam, I told a very funny joke, which you can go and find it, but it was about murderous pussy was the name. Mm-hmm. Of it, yeah. The type of pussy you might have, you know.
Right.
Very clever, though, I must say. But I said that word maybe, I don't know how many times mm-hmm. I said pussy, enough, you know, to make the joke funny, I guess. And someone in an article wrote about how many times I actually said that word. You know, and it was like, I'm funny, but it's still all this but.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
She's too raw or she's too this and that. I'm trying to think of the adjectives they use, because when it's flipped and it's a white woman, for instance, when Amy mm-hmm. Schumer got her show, Inside Amy Schumer, mm-hmm. she got praised in, let's say, Variety, some magazine, for getting the word pussy to be accepted on network, either network TV. It was something that was feminist.
Oh, yeah.
So
it was empowering when offending
when
you said
it. It's a very offensive black woman like myself.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Those are some of the things that you're trying mm-hmm. to deal with, because I just only want to be myself.
Right.
You know, my reach is big, though. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Like, because if you don't know my particular situations, the jokes, you're going to live vicariously through me. And
right.
so you're like, oh, wow, that's interesting. You know, I'm that detailed that you're going to feel it. And then most people you can relate. You know, mm-hmm. funny is just funny. And so those are some of the things that you deal with. Once you do get a job, though, depending on what they're looking for, because it might be a thing where, like, oh, I want the natural girl and mm-hmm. I want a blonde and I want an ethnic, you know, I want somebody Asian. You know, you do get those kinds of things, and it gets hard to know which one you're. I don't know where the fro or the slick hair to the audition, because I don't necessarily know what you're looking for, and I could go wrong.
I know.
And the same, like when I was working for a television show, and I would sometimes be on camera, in the contract it said I could not change my image unless I consulted with them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You have contracts like that. They want you to keep your long red hair. Uh-huh. Remember back in the day when Ally McBeal was it?
Oh,
no,
yeah.
No. Was it? No.
It was...
It was so jaw-dropping. Was it the 90s? I don't know why I'm bringing this up,
no,
but you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, I get
it. Was it Felicity? What was that girl's name?
She was
so popular back then. Is it Felicity?
Was it Felicity that had the TV show?
Big curly hair. And then she decided she wanted to cut her hair off. And if that wasn't on the cover of every magazine.
Oh, they had a fit.
Yes.
Oh, right?
Yeah. You
and
remember.
Now, yes, I remember exactly what you're talking about, but I cannot think
that?
Of it was.
Hey, somebody in the comments, when you listen to this,
yes,
tell us who that
gonna,
was.
It's going to hit me toward the end.
When
we're
done.
Go,
and I don't feel like Googling it. Yeah, it's not worth the Google. But image is important. Now, one thing I'll say, and if we want to switch to another question, because I feel like I've been talking long.
No,
we love that.
Tell us.
Oh, is that the good thing about the space that we're in now is everything is so accepting.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I don't think it matters as much now mm-hmm. what that image is. Do I still think about, you know, I want to put more tattoos on my mm-hmm. arm, but I do think about the fact of, you know, the roles I might want to play and, you know, if you're big enough at that time to get all those covered, because if you're worth it, they'll cover all those tattoos
for
you.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't want to mess up any chance with them. Like, it's too many tattoos. It's not really what we're looking for. So I still have that in the back of my head.
Mm-hmm.
There's this aesthetic that mm-hmm. women, you know, that they kind of put women in sometimes, whether it's the lighter colored hair or mm-hmm. being, like I say, it's a good time right now, though, because right now being black and being cultural and being ethnic and being different is popular.
Absolutely.
And
it wasn't
for me and when I first started, for the first 10 years of my career, mm-hmm. I know, you know, so a little bit I'm like, yay, everybody.
But then
I'm like,
the hair today.
Yeah, hence the hair today, because I was like, man, beautiful. Fuck Hollywood, man. I'm going to cut my hair. Yeah. If you want to put a wig on me, put a wig on me, man. But I'm not getting ready to sit here and have to go through all this strain to look for what I think you might want.
Exactly.
Because I don't even know. You know what I mean? So it's like, the best thing you can ever do is be so comfortable with you and with yourself and you know, kind of have the F the world kind of attitude about it. Because, you make things beautiful.
So when you first started out, I mean... It's interesting because I'm sitting here and I'm trying to think of all of the comedians that I can think of off the top of my head.
It's
kind of
tough.
It's
think
tough.
Of them.
You know, I mean, I think of Ali Wong and I think of Whitney Cummings and Amy. But when you started out and you were getting your material together, mm-hmm. you know, because most people, like you think about Kevin Hart and he talks about his personal stuff, you know, mm-hmm. his growing up and his family. Mm-hmm. I mean, is there that pressure to talk about women's, you know, women's issues, women's stuff, funny stuff that happens to women? Does it, or do you just,
I try to stay away from that.
Yeah.
One of the, I tried to stay away from anything that was specifically womany.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. No period talk.
Right.
No,
exactly.
No, you know, I just didn't want to do that. Mm-hmm. And, what was I going to say? I was staying away from things that were specifically that way. And I also was staying away from male bashing.
Oh, okay.
Because when I was coming up, that was still quite popular. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Kind of, yeah, it was still kind of cool to put down the men. I grew up with a really cool father, and
right.
I know a lot of great men, you know, and even though they fall short, whatever, so do we.
Yeah.
I just don't feel like that's the way, you know what I mean? And it doesn't look good. It's not nice.
No. And you don't need to.
And in comedy, there's such a huge audience for being unkind and that being
very
the funniness.
Much so.
Instead of, I mean, I imagine it's everybody wants to poke a finger at somebody.
You really do.
To get the
I
laugh.
Try not to do that. I do a lot of responsibility, self-responsibility comedy. And all the stuff I talk about, if it has to do with me, it has to do with me taking 100% responsibility with what was going on or how I'm dealing with it. You know?
Can you give us a joke? Do us a little bit.
No, definitely. One of the things that came to mind was, I talk about I don't like men that struggle. And not that you have to struggle, but I don't like men that talk about it. Like, you can struggle, just don't tell me. You know what I mean? Like, you keep that to yourself. I ain't tell you my problems, don't tell me yours. We not there yet.
That's so true.
I mean, it is. And so I was talking about that and talking about a guy that complains a lot and would like to let me know that he was struggling. And then I was just saying I wanted to go out more, I think it was. Uh-huh. The whole bit was just about what I didn't like in a man, but because I told myself, well, I'm going to treat myself the way I want to be treated.
Right.
If he ain't spending the kind of money on me I want to be spent, well, I can do that. Y'all have to wait on a man to do for me what I know I can do for myself.
Exactly.
I will date myself, you know? I will take myself out and treat it. I'm not going to blame him and complain. I'm going to do something about it. So my do something about it was to take myself out. And after like a couple of dates, I realized that I can't afford me. And it was really bad. Oh, I hated me. I wanted to lose my number. I was like, please don't take yourself out again. This is killing you. I got the bill and was like, nah, I see why we arguing. This is bullshit. Who ordered all this food? What the fuck? You know, so I'll
I
go
love
into
that.
But
yeah.
It's more of, yeah, I can poke at you and say, you ain't this and that. And men, they don't spend enough on us.
Right.
And whoop-de-whoop-de-whoop. And then you say, well, wait a minute. Let me put myself in there. Situation.
Yeah.
Let me put myself in that situation.
So you have self-reflection.
Self-reflection comedy.
And it's different because it's so normal to hear women bashing men or men talking about, you know, their love lives and going out with these crazy women. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like all of that stuff is like, or, you know, growing up in, you know, with crazy parents or.
Right. And I talk about that too, but then I talk about how I'm in therapy now and what that does for me and me understanding some of the actions that I have today. Why I wasn't able to get a man. I was pushing men away. I always wanted more, but that's because I had so little when I was growing up, you know? And so it was always, you know, this scarcity feeling, you know what I mean? And so I was dating out of that.
I might know a little about that.
You know what I mean? I'm like, I ain't going to poverty ever again in my life. I got to marry well. I cannot. You know, I just always... You know, it was my insecurity about poverty, you know, because I had been through it. But I talk about that in my comedy. You know, I mean, it's not always their fault, you know, because the men be like, well, what you want more of? Shit, more than what you're doing. Opposite of less. I want more.
But there would never be enough.
It would never be enough. And that's what I was saying.
Yeah. There will, the hole is there and there's
and
no filling
I went,
it.
Right.
Exactly.
And understood that. Then, you know, and the same, the struggle talk, all that circled around the fact of how I grew up. And people see that when they leave my show, they're usually like, you feel better. You know, it could have been a sermon, but it wasn't. You know
right.
what I mean?
No,
you know?
Right.
And I love that. I love for people to leave better than they came. You know, we have and in fact, I've said this a lot. My father was a preacher, but as a.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But we have I have a bigger congregation than most pastors on any given night.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And so it's like, how dare I not leave you with something that's going to make you
better? Well, and you're going to be more relatable than so often a pastor, because of the role that they play. It's fine to hear what they say and you can put it into your life, but not in a relatable sense where you feel like that would be possible for you.
Right. I like to have practical comment. You know what I mean? I want to show you how you can put, you know, use this in your own
well,
life.
And it's funny and you feel good and you know, sometimes preachers or, you know, you think about kids that are forced to go to church and then, they don't remember a thing that was said.
No, it could be quite
when
the
you're
drag.
when it's funny and it's engaging
and it's more so it's relatable because the pastors I remember liking are the ones that could put it into terms that I could understand and put it into things that I could do for myself.
Do you want to share a little bit about your history? Anything.
My history?
Well, sure.
In regards to my father or just in general?
Whatever.
Whatever you want.
Whatever you want to.
I mean, I think I know a little bit of some of your story, but not a ton. And I just feel like one of our things with Raw is that we really like to have women who are extraordinary, but are still so ordinarily relatable that everyone out there can be like, she did it, I can too.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm definitely a she did it, I can. If she did it, I can too. When I started doing comedy, my kids were very young. My daughter was maybe one and my son was three or something like that. And so I don't know. It was the one thing the kid thing is the one thing that kind of makes I feel my chest getting a little tight. You know what I mean? Because it's like I had to make some strong choices.
Right.
I had to make some strong choices. And I get sensitive about the time that I don't want to say missed, but the times that I was away from my children.
Right.
But I think our relationship is so darn good. It's like, how can I question, you know, things that happen, you know, my kids definitely went to stay, and thank God for my family, you know, my sisters, my mother. And I do like to share this story, because I feel it's important for, to be authentic about women and kids and childbirth and all that. My son, very delightful, you know, when I was just jumping on stuff, it was just the most beautiful time. I had a daughter, a lot more strain on me, on my body. And then when she was born, it was like, it just didn't have that click. It didn't click. Right. She looked more like her dad. It was weird, you know. It just was.
The connection was not strong.
The connection was not there. And I knew something was wrong. But one night I found myself like whooping her little legs. Like she might have been 3 months or something. She's a baby. And I mean, I'm like, what the hell could a baby have done? That you in here tapping her little leg? Like, what the hell is wrong? You know, I'm like, what is wrong with you? Right. Like, this is a baby. Right. And I called my sister and told her, like, something isn't right. And I'm not sure what. It's just not right. And I can't, you know. And she said, and I appreciate her. She was so bright and cheery. I was like, girl, ain't no problem. Bring that baby to me. I got enough love. You know, I'm saying so much love down here. And when you feel better, you come back and get her. And talking about no judgment. Just like, girl.
Right.
You know. Bring me that baby. That's okay. It's all right. You know what I mean? Spend some time. And then, like, in a couple of months, I missed her so much. But it was something that I had to be attentive to, you know, and attend to myself.
Yeah. And, I mean, you realize that in yourself. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. You know, some people say, well, how could you with your child? And no,
I can't explain it. I really can't. But now she's like, I mean, my heart, like, I miss her now. We're going to get her tomorrow. But that's my homegirl, man. Yeah. She's the better part of me. You know what I mean? She's made me a better person. She's definitely made me a better person and to treasure. She's made me better, you know. So that was always tough. And then just traveling with those children, you know. But I think it was good because it taught them that go get it spirit. They're very resilient children. And they were made for me, you know. I have like a lot of sisters, and you know, sometimes their kids were like, oh, my mama, she gone a day. I can't be away from the parents. That just drives me nuts. My kids, I would show them and be like, okay, I'm going to Japan and Germany, I'll be back. Look at this date right here on the calendar. It might be 30 days later. And say, okay, well, as long as I know which day you're coming back.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. I just like, thank God for them. They never made me feel guilty or anything.
Here's the thing with that too, because I get so pissy about just because some kind of parenting where if you were blessed enough to be a stay-at-home mom, if that was your jam, do not look at me when I was a single mom that had jobs where my 12-year-old was watching the rest of the kids when I went to work, because guess what? They were eating.
Yes.
Yes.
They were cared for. They grew up with great morals. Right? I did what I had to do and made every sacrifice that I needed to make for my kids to turn out well, as good people, not helicopter mom.
Right.
So there's this idea that somehow you're not a mom if you don't fit some mold. And that's bullshit.
It's very much bullshit. Very much. And that isn't the way that... No one way is right, you know, as long as there's love involved and stuff like that. Because for me, some of the hardships that I went through taught me to be the go-getter mm-hmm. that I am today. You know what I mean? And if I hadn't had those things happening, I wouldn't. I was going to say what Brian always says. disappointment builds character or whatever. And mm-hmm. so it was like in some of those moments when even I was away from my parents at times, you know, mm-hmm. and you felt disappointed. But it was like, I don't know. Something in me was like, I don't know. I went and got a book. I don't know what the hell. I just had a resilient spirit where it was like, I knew it wasn't because they didn't love me. Mm-mm. I just knew that there were circumstances in which, you know, mm-hmm. kept them from me. And then I said, I don't want to do that in the same way mm-hmm. with my children. And I didn't. It was different. It was different with my, yeah.
And there, you know, things change over the years as well. So, you know, you can look back at certain times and think, oh my gosh, I can't believe that I actually did that or that I had to do that or whatever it is. But you know what? At the moment, you never know what you need to do in a moment. So you do what you need to do in that moment. And maybe, you know, a year later or a couple years later when you're thinking back about it, you're like, oh my gosh, I wish I hadn't done that. Or, oh my gosh, I'm so glad that at that moment I made that right choice. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at your children now and you look at how strong they are and how loved they are.
Yes.
You know, and I think that as long as you are love, as long as you are giving as much love and as giving them what they need, then, you know, if you're gone for 30 days because you're out there grinding it out and trying to make your money.
Lessons, right. It was another lesson mm-hmm. that they were learning. And part of that was go for your dreams, you know, because now I'm very young and firm and happy and my kids are grown, you mm-hmm. know, and if I hadn't taken time to get to know myself and do the things that I have dreamed to do, I can't mm-hmm. live their life. Now they out living their life. Now what if I wouldn't have been working on mine?
Right.
And I'm just now getting started doing comedy. And mm-hmm. I'm just now getting started. Man, please. You know what I'm saying? Because they're not even thinking about me.
And I think that it comes down to the choices that you make. What is your motivation for doing it?
Right.
So if your motivation, for instance, let's flip it and say that you hadn't gone and done what you did. That would have been motivated by guilt and fear mm-hmm. and shame.
Come on now.
Right?
That's so true.
So what kind of children would you have raised mm-hmm. if mm-hmm. the energy with which you were approaching life was from guilt, mm-hmm. fear, right.
and
shame?
Right.
You would have raised children who only know their mother right. from that energetic exchange, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. they'd be a mess.
They would.
Well, it's just like when you were talking about men, mm-hmm. you know, you were approaching it from not having a lot and thinking you needed more. And so it hindered you from getting what you want or from actually seeing what was in front of you.
Right.
And so the same thing with that, you mm-hmm. know, you can't, and there are a lot of women that do that. I mean, it's, you mentioned, what if I had waited? I know so many women.
I do.
And they literally, I don't know if it's just the focus on your kids and get them through, and now you've got your life, and now you're trying to do, and it's
I mean, that's totally me a little bit.
It is.
Sure.
And depending on how many
really,
you have.
Yeah,
and I
was struggle.
Like, I only had the two, and I knew not to have no more than two mm-hmm. because I could not, you know, and I tell people stuff all the time, only get as many as you can concentrate on. I couldn't concentrate on more than two.
And if you were a man, you probably wouldn't even have some of the same mm-mm. thoughts about it, because men will go and travel. They may not be gone for 30 days, but maybe from Sunday to Thursday, every single week they travel, and no one looks at that and says, well,
Well, not really.
Look at that dad. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I
but
had
if
to
the
do
mom
that,
does it.
With my son, he eventually mm-hmm. went, I sent him to live with his father because we'd always agreed on that. If I wasn't married by a certain time, mm-hmm. that he needed to be around a male figure, you know? And his father's the best one to grab.
Yeah.
And so he came and got him. But he put me on child support. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So it was like I'm paying child support
I
to
know.
This man for like 9 years.
I know.
And he never, you know, pay me any money, but it was,
I know
that
wow.
was definitely looked at as strange. I had to deal with guilt, you know, when you talk about being mm-hmm. a mom and being the non-custodial parent. I know when we were raised, you know, back in the 90s, 80s and stuff, if somebody had a kid, that meant the state came and got them. Wasn't no agreement, wasn't nothing cute, and you were like, that bitch probably drink and do drugs.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
You just judged her, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I tell this joke, I actually do drink and do drugs, but that is not why I didn't have my kids. it was a power move, man. But no, and I'm glad, too, that a lot of the gender role stuff, you know, mm-hmm. is... people are understanding it's not a clear line, and mm-hmm. there isn't, you know what I mean? It was different to go through, but now I think in the society where people are like, oh yeah, you better pay for child support. There's nothing for a woman to pay it now, you mm-hmm. know, and you're not necessarily looked at as, that there's something wrong. You know, mm-hmm. people are willing to kind of hear your story, if right. you will.
There's so, know? Yeah, there's so many. I mean, it can't be black and white. It just can't. I mean, like years ago, it was very black and white.
Yes.
True. You know, I can think of so many instances where, you know, I have friends whose children are taken away, and I'm like, mm-hmm,
mm-hmm,
mm-hmm.
mm-hmm.
And then I didn't even know the story. Yeah. Like, I didn't even know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Had no idea yep. what was going on.
Exactly.
And but if the fathers don't have custody,
there's no thought in the world. You mm-hmm. definitely don't think he's a bad guy.
Right. Mm-hmm. You just think, oh, well, of course they're with their mother.
Their mother.
Of course. Mm-hmm. And I don't like that. You know, I mean, it shouldn't be a given. You know, I mean, to me. But, you know.
It absolutely shouldn't be a given.
So I'm super curious, just yes. because now I've heard what a go-getter you are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are your goals now? Like, if I think about all that you've accomplished, because mm-hmm. that's a lot of shit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're an actress, a comedian, a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And raised my children.
You mm-hmm. raised your children.
I teach self-defense Mother. Now.
You're yeah. getting married.
I'm getting married. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all great.
So what next?
Just to add some cherries on top of that shit. What's next for me is just complete happiness, and I feel like the doors will open toward, you know what I mean?
So.
If I just keep being happy mm-hmm. and doing the things that I enjoy doing.
Some things will pop up.
It will, mm-hmm. because some of the things that have happened, I didn't quite know that they were going to happen mm-hmm. in the way they are. I think it's just more enlarging the territory in which I'm in. I don't think it's necessarily a change, but it's just... I would like the opportunity for more of the world to get to hear my funniness.
Mm-hmm.
I have quite the gift, and I really, really, really enjoy sharing it for specific reasons. It's like, it's my way to serve, mm-hmm. you know? And so it's like the whole famous thing, or being famous, is not really that. I don't care about being famous per se, but I just, I like influencing.
Mm-hmm.
I like influencing people, you know? I like, to inspire people. And I think that the more that people can hear your story, as we were talking before, you know what I mean? That's more of what I am. So
I got a thing. Go. Finish.
You got a thing. Okay. So if it's starring in movies,
oh,
if
no.
it's starring in sitcoms, it's all just so that I can have a larger mm-hmm. way to serve people.
I think you should do motivational speaking.
People ask me to do that a lot.
Because you can use, mm-hmm. Here's what I see or think or feel or whatever it is. So because you have this reflection, this impact that you want, that you are, you know, you say you have a congregation. So I almost feel like if you were doing the exact same thing that you're doing, but you talk about being a transformational speaker, mm-hmm. in addition to being a comedian and actress, you get some different gigs.
You do.
You would. And if just wearing that hat or even opening up to the energy of that, doors will open more for you in that area. You'll
I mean,
grow
just
your
watching
audience.
You talk to us now.
Yes.
Your body language and how you, your facial expressions and how you move in your hands. And I was sitting here going, she reminds me of, you know, Tony Robbins and all of these people.
Motivational speaker.
You know. I could definitely, I'm very open to that.
Keynotes,
very open
at
to
graduations.
That. I do
yes.
them sometimes mm-hmm. when I'm called to do it, mm-hmm. but I haven't accepted it. You know, in a sense of, you know what I mean? Just really took that robe and put that on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Done training for mm-hmm. motivational speakers because they don't have to be funny. It's just nice if you are.
Right.
So, like, I've helped motivational speakers, but
you would
be funnier.
I think you could do some women empowerment summits, things mm-hmm. like that, and do some motivational speaking around women's empowerment and things like that, that you could grow your audience, tenfold
and it's something that you could, you know, like maybe not right at this moment, maybe right now your jam is going on the improv circuit mm-hmm. or, you know, you're writing for all of these comedy shows, but that's something as you progress through your career that could be waiting for you as well. You know, once you get to that point where you, it just changes a little bit.
No, I believe that. Yeah. I believe that. When mm-hmm. I first started, when I very first started comedy, one, I said I wouldn't swear. at all. Mm-hmm. And for the first year or so, I didn't.
Really?
But then swearing is so much damn fun.
And it is.
It's just so colorful. But I enjoy being clean all that time. Mm-hmm. It was just something because my father just was always saying that, you know, you have more to you. And my mother, that, you know, you have a broadened vocabulary. There's mm-hmm. no need to dumb yourself down by using swear words mm-hmm. when you know you have other words to use. But it's fun. And it, and, you know, it brings a certain mood
it does
to things. And so I said that I wouldn't swear, and then I always left with something motivational mm-hmm. For the I would say, you know, it's for the women, but men, you'll get something out this too. Mm-hmm. And I used to tell a little story about apples on trees, women being apples on trees, mm-hmm. and how the bad apples were on the ground, and that's why the men would pick them up very easy. But it was like, if you were up high in the tree because you're a good apple, mm-hmm. you know, or whatever, that they had to, you know,
they had to work a little harder.
Had to work a little harder, yeah. You know. But the point is that, yes, I'm very into motivating people. Mm-hmm. I'm very much into self-healing, you mm-hmm. know, people really you know, being introspective and really knowing that the good and the bad things are like, you're responsible for that in mm-hmm. a sense. You know what I mean? Like, when something bad is going on, you know, you should be able to say, like, you know what, I did that.
Mm-hmm.
And then in
just
that
take
way,
ownership and
take ownership of it, because mm-hmm. then you're the solution too. If you're the problem, you're right. also the solution. And so you can say, when great things happen, hey, I did that.
For better or for worse, you can own it all. Yeah.
You really can, though.
Yep. You do. It's freeing. I think
everything. Yeah.
I mean, I think we do, mm-hmm. and I think that even any challenge that comes to us is just a reflection of what mm-hmm. is happening internally, externally. I think all of those things are intricately related.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you definitely. I mean, the old adage of the God will never give you more than you can handle. I think it's because it's a reflection of what needs to come about. Mm-hmm. So, of course, you're not given anything you can't handle, because that's what needs right. to come about to mm-hmm. solve it. You're the solution.
Right.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. You got some more for me?
It's fascinating just sitting here watching her, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, because you're not that any of our other guests haven't been colorful, but you're just, she's got this glow, this vibrancy that's all around her. So when she's sitting here talking, and her hands and her face, it's like you can't take your eyes off of her.
I appreciate that. I'm in good spirits. I feel like, you know, those inner things. Mm-hmm. For some reason, I thought about a musical instrument that you were tuning or something, but I just feel in harmony, I would say, on the inside. You know, I could just feel my, you know, strum, like everything right. coming into tune, and it feels very harmonious inside of me right now.
So tell us here.
You want to feel how it feels inside me, Brian? I'm
playing. yes.
Oh, Lord, I'm so glad Christina's not here.
Oh, my God. Christina would have a cow.
She would take it running. So tell us, so quickly, before we mm-hmm. we finish here, tell us what's your most favorite place to perform. Do you have one? Or
I thought you were gonna ask me about one of my favorite stories.
That
would even be better.
Yeah, that might be even better.
Favorite places to perform? I don't know, because I love a good stage. It doesn't matter. You know, you could put a platform right here in the kitchen. I will go in and like have a ball. Even if y'all weren't here, like mm-hmm. literally have a ball and yeah,
karaoke.
And enjoy myself. But if you don't mm-hmm. enjoy you, who else will? Like, I could do a comedy show all by myself and laugh my butt off. But I do like doing comedy overseas. I'm mm-hmm. not gonna say it's my favorite, mm-hmm. but I do like that. For some reason, I maybe the thought of my comedy so universal, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? And just knowing that, you know, people that are all the way on the other side of the world are laughing. I did. Mm-hmm. Oh, cool story.
Tell us.
So, there's this prince in, Seychelles, mm-hmm. and he's a Saudi prince,
mm-hmm.
and he has a resort in Seychelles, Africa, and he likes entertainment. And so mm-hmm. he would bring comedians in and different acts from around the world to entertain. And so, I was living in LA at the time, I think, and I went, they flew us to Africa, uh-huh. you know, to this beautiful island, and we're staying on the resort, and it's all nice. And then we come into this room, and they give us all these rules about, now look, when the prince come in, you do not give him eye contact. Do not look at him. Don't speak to him. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It was just this whole thing. Do not touch him. Just don't, you know, it's this whole thing. And so we come into this room, and it's like maybe 40 people in the room, mm-hmm. 40 people maybe. And then there's this couch on the back, and it's really dark. You know, maybe I can see some figures, mm-hmm. you know, sitting back there, and I'm doing my thing, and I'm telling my jokes and mm-hmm. getting it in. And a lot of them spoke French.
Right.
So mm-hmm. there were language barriers. Mm-hmm. And so for me, that means just be more physical or do different things. You know what I mean? Where you're going to laugh mm-hmm. at something. And I finished, maybe did about 20, 30 minutes, finished. And the prince stood up. You know, mm-hmm. he was in the back on that dark thing. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't really see him. But I can see them standing up and so forth. And so I get home. And like the next day or so, I get a call like, man, the prince really, really likes you. Will you come back? He wants you to come back. And I was like, what? I was
like, wow. Right.
And so like a couple of weeks later, I go back to Seychelles uh-huh. to do another show. And they didn't bring back the other guy I was with. But they brought me back.
Uh-huh.
And, yes. And they were like entertainers like from all over. Like they right. were doing the belly dancing and the Arabian, like mm-hmm. doing the mm-hmm. whole thing. Like it
so
was
just entertainers that
ooh,
he was.
It was nice. Mm-hmm. No, it was very nice. And so this next time I come back and it's less people. In this room, in the small dark room, you know what I'm saying? So I'm like, oh my God, you know, and sometimes bigger crowds help because, you know, mm-hmm. laughter's contagious or whatever. So I'm like, oh my goodness, this is an exclusive crowd. Maybe it's like 30 people yeah. in here and the tables are kind of closer. I don't see this back thing, you know, so mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't know. And so I'm telling a joke about a stripper.
Mm-hmm.
And she's funny. Her name's Sympathy. And she doesn't get money from tips. I mean, from dancing because she doesn't dance good. But she gets money for counseling. She's a bereavement stripper. Sympathy. And so, and I'm doing this bit. And like, oh my God, I heard you lost your job or whatever. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And I knew, and I go around to the different tables to kind of dance. And mm-hmm. in America, I'll get all on you and be funny and be mm-hmm. this stripper or whatever. But I knew, I don't know all the customs, so I didn't want to touch anyone.
Right.
And I stood back and I'm doing this whole thing like, oh my God. And this guy sitting there with these two girls. I'm like, I heard you, you know, couldn't make up your mind. Which one do you want? You know, something. I'm just doing yeah. the thing, shaking my butt. I get done with the thing and I was like, well, was everything cool? He's like, oh yeah, the prince loves you and da-da-da. And I was like, just if you could please, because there's a guy that booked us and then there's a guy that talks to the prince. Like the guy mm-hmm. that booked us cannot speak to the prince. There's this one guy that speaks to the prince. And so he came back and shook my hand. I said, could you please let the prince know that I'm so, you know, thankful that he had mm-hmm. me and blah, blah, blah. And he said, oh, you were dancing on the prince.
Oh, my God.
He said, no, it's okay. It's okay. Like, cause I was like, I didn't know what was going to happen because right. somebody asked some question. Like the guy that I was with the time before kept asking the booker questions about the prince. Like, so is it oil money? He's like, yes, it's oil money. Then he told us everything that he could mm-hmm. tell us. Like he's 30 something. He's blah, 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 blah. And then he was like, so, he was talking about the pilot or doing something. And the lady kept going like, if I tell you, I have to kill you. But she wasn't laughing or smiling at all.
Serious.
It was yeah. very serious. So when I found out, I said, I had my butt shaking it at the prince. He said, oh, no, he loves you, child. I said, oh, okay, good. Thank
no.
you.
Phew. That's an but, awesome yeah. story.
One more awesome story, and I'm so done.
No.
Okay,
oh, go. We love the stories.
So I like going overseas. I like knowing that my comedy is universal and that mm-hmm. I can entertain, you know what I mean, all kinds of people from all walks of life. You know, a prince all the way to the projects. It doesn't matter. And so... I like performing at award shows. So I perform at shows like the Soul Train Awards, BET Awards, Black Girls Rock. You know, there's quite a few shows I perform comedy. What I do is called warm-ups. I'm a warm-up comedian. Mm-hmm. So before the show starts, I come out and I tell jokes, get everybody comfortable. And as the show is going on and different mm-hmm. acts are coming in the middle of it, while you all are on commercial and home, I'm on stage.
Okay, I always wondered about that. Yeah, I always wondered about that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's my job. And so I was at Black Girls Rock, mm-hmm. and on this particular time, and I've met so many wonderful people. I almost shed a tear thinking about all the wonderful mm-hmm. people I've met through that. But on this day, Mrs. Obama.
Oh, stop it.
Mrs. Obama
stop
was there.
It.
Yes, yes, yes.
Stop.
So we all knew she was coming and so forth and so on. And so I'm like, ugh. So when she gets there,
her.
I'm on stage when she walks in. So I'm like, oh my gosh. And so I'm like, you know, everybody, it's, you know, it's Mrs. Obama. And everybody rises and we're clapping mm-hmm. and we're going. And I'm just like, oh,
we love
God,
her.
God.
Right.
Yes, of course you do. And so she sits down and I'm, you know, I'm like, all right, now everybody settle down. You know, and I had to start cracking jokes. And I was telling her how I always wanted to marry a president. Mm-hmm. But because of my past, I don't think it'll be the president of the United States. But. You know, as long as he kind of be the
yeah.
president of Meineke, I don't
exactly,
care. I just wanted somebody
yeah.
presidential, president of my block club. I don't care. I just wanted some presidential. And so I'm telling these jokes and I'm going. And then I tell a joke about Oh, because it was a couple of years ago, and it was so much. You know, everybody was into these fake booties, which there still are right now. Mm-hmm. But everybody was just getting them right back then, a couple of years ago. So, and I was just saying how, you know, I just don't have the kind of booty that I thought I had. You know mm-hmm. what I mean, or whatever. And I don't want to feel pressured. I was saying how much I had I said a very polite booty. It's very polite. You come in, it's quiet, and it's mind its own business. Yeah. You might not even know what's in the room. Very quiet booty. I said, but some of y'all have a disrespectful booty. I mean, you knocking over tables with your booty. Breaking up relationships with your booty. You just old rude booty child, right? And so I'm done. And I say, well, look, I got to go. I can't tell a bunch of jokes because I'm going to get cut off and I leave. Yeah. And so I'm standing in the back and I get and I ask the head of BET, mm-hmm. Or I forgot her title at this time. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I asked her, could she please, I don't know why I'm asking, but is there some way that I can get a picture with Mrs. Obama? She was like, honey, Miss Deborah Lee said, I don't even know if I can get the bit. You know what I mean? And she'd been to my, whatever she was saying, you know. And she said, but, you know, I don't, you know, maybe God's in the business. I done bless in business. And so, not but a moment later, I get a tap on my shoulder.
From
Secret Service. And and they say, excuse me, but Mrs. Obama would like to take a picture with you. At the end. I said, what? And they're like, if you could just stick around, she would love to take a picture with you. Because also, I'm leaving the stage during one of the breaks, and she's coming to the stage. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm finna walk past her. And so when I walk past her, she stopped me and said, you're brilliant. She said, you're so funny and you're beautiful and you're classy. And I got the same compliment from Felicia Rashad.
I love Felicia Rashad. Claire Huxtable.
She was like, the best thing about you is that you do things with class and you don't have to swear. Like, you're just a class act and you're beautiful and you're so very funny. So to get that.
That's what we feel from you is integrity. You're aligned. Your integrity is,
I think that's what it is. I think that's where the glow is. I mean, to be honest,
and
like
you said,
crazy.
Everything feels
harmonious inside. Mm-hmm. Very intense.
It's your integrity.
So you got your picture.
To finish the Michelle Obama story. I forgot. So I'm backstage, and it's Cicely Tyson, all these different people.
I
love Cicely Tyson too. And her handler was so rude though. I should have just took the picture because they were like, you should have just took it, child. Anyway, point is, I'm back there because I'm like, we're all somebody. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, exactly. Why would I be back in the back room? And so I think it was Tracee Ellis Ross.
And I love her too.
I know, right? So we're all back there. It's going down. And so Mrs. Obama comes in and I go over and I take the picture with her and we're smiling, holding each other. And she, you know, we're both from Chicago. And so, I think I made that joke because I was telling her, because she went to a more prestigious school and mine was in the hood. And so I made a little joke,
but that's okay. That. Yep.
And so we're smiling and laughing and I'm about to walk away. And she says, now wait a minute, you can't leave. You ain't gonna tell me what type of booty I have. Oh my gosh. And I'm glad I'm quick on my feet. I said, respectfully so. I said, I can't comment on that. I said, but do you want to know what the streets say? I tell you what the streets say. She said, what the streets say? I said, oh, the streets is talking. She said, girl, they talking. I said, the streets talking. The streets say it's disrespectful. I just said, what? So we back there laughing. So when you see the picture, that's what we're laughing about. And so my thought is that, and I hope that she went home and told President Obama that she had a disrespectful booty. And just to continue with it, just on cool stuff that happens, her Secret Service was so sweet and gave me a number to contact them. And she actually has tried to come to one of my shows, but it was like we were at Martha's Vineyard at the same time. Uh-huh. But they were on a whole nother side of the island, of course, and the venue it was just too small and they couldn't do it.
Right.
But just to know that I was thought about even after the performance and even when I did, because I don't always call when people say call because of fear or whatever,
right?
But I actually did call, and to know that, you know, that she meant that. And
I think she totally would come see you. Okay.
Yeah.
I think she totally would want to come see you. That is such a great story. I love her.
Great story. And I actually have not told the that whole story to anyone. I was going to actually wait until I was on a late night show. But you know what?
You can still tell it on a late night show.
Oh, I will. But, you know,
I love that.
Yeah, I got
Thank
to give
you
it
so
to the raw
much.
Ladies.
You are so, man, we need to have you back. Like,
well, you
this
know,
is not even enough
usually
time.
Usually I'm just in the back room sleep, so
I know.
I'll come out. No, I'm just
so this will be easy. We definitely want to
Thank you
back.
For having me.
You
this
were
was a good
so,
conversation. I learned some things about myself. It was good.
Well, it was awesome, and it's different. It was different. So, but thank you, Vanessa. I mean,
it's my pleasure.
Beautiful. I mean, that is, and she's right. There's this thing about you. I mean, we've known it since we've come in here, but like today, like just hearing your story and hearing a little bit about your journey. And I know that there's more there, so.
Oh, there's plenty of stories.
Yeah, there's more there, so we definitely want you to come back on.
Thank you so much.
But thank you so much.
And please follow me, listeners, all my raw people, follow me at Vanessa
Fraction. Tell them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, follow me at Vanessa Fraction. I also have a podcast on the ATL Podcast Network called Comedy Dogs. If you like comedians and you like dogs, you're going to love Comedy Dogs.
We've talked about Brian and Vanessa's dog, Brother Jones. He's precious.
Brother Jones is the best, and so I have a great dog. Other comedians have great dogs as well, and so on that show we talk about
friends. It's awesome.
Yeah.
So I guess we're gonna end it, and I can say I'm the only one here since Anissa had to go get another next guest. So I'll let Vanessa help me. It says you can hear Anissa and Ellen on multiple platforms.
You can visit atlpn.com, atlpodcastnetwork.com, and on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, and now on Spotify.
Ooh, you just search for ATL Podcast Network or Anissa and Ellen Raw to find our show. So we've got ATL Podcast Network on Instagram.
Yep.
Atlanta Podcast Network on Instagram, Ellen Nickel on Instagram, Anissa Amison, and Vanessa Fraction.
Boom.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I love both of you so much.
I love you too.
All right.